Welcome, Progressive Radio Network listeners, green future growers, and anyone who's new to the show. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing. Hey, green future growers. Did you get your copy of the Organic Gardener podcast, Garden Journal, and Record Keeper? One of the things that I've learned to be most beneficial for my guests that will save you time and energy is to keep detailed records of your garden journey. So I think I finally found the secret and made a garden journal data keeper that starts any day of the year because you just fill it in. It's blank. There's no calendar. So you just, it's got the days of the week. You can record temperature, freeze dates, frost dates, when you planted, what variety you got, all in one place. So get your copy of the Organic Gardener podcast, Garden Journal, and Data Keeper today. Okay. I don't want to forget that. Okay. Last night I was listening to this podcast and this guy was talking about if you want to really, really, really make a big impact, it needs to be a business. And I think about Anastasia Cole Pukleas was one of my guests, and she wrote this book called The Farm on the Roof. And they set out, they have the biggest farm, I think, on the roof in the world, or I can't remember, I haven't read her book in a while, but like, or they helped build it. But they're in Brooklyn, and she, their story is just amazing. But a big part of their story is about entrepreneurship and how if you really want to make change, it needs to be a business. And I was just listening to this guy yesterday. He was like, you know, aid only goes so far, but to make a huge impact, like I think he was talking about third world countries and how the UN can really help them the most. And I saw a thing on Link TV about that the other day. And so awesome. That's a business. I'm so excited to hear. And then not only that, so at Family Literacy Night this week, one of my parents came up to me and asked me, and he said, well, my son said that you're recycling plastic in your classroom, and how can I find out about that, because my daughter works for the EPA here in our town and they really want to get that going, and where do we, you know, what do we do? And so it all comes together. And one of my friends challenged me to quit using plastic as much as she, that was her resolution last year, her New Year's resolution, and she kind of challenged me or inspired me to try that this year. But it is a challenge. But my kids are always like, why are you drinking out of a glass canning jar? And I'm like, because I'm trying not to use a plastic bottle. Well, it's not the easiest, but
no,
it's getting there.
No, it's possible. And like using the mason jars like you do, that's one thing we absolutely love and promote. It's such a versatile thing. You can use it as a cup, as a mug, for storing leftovers, for bringing lunch. It's really versatile that way. And that's one that is so accessible to anybody. It's completely free. All you'd have to do is buy a jar of spaghetti sauce and there you've got a good mason jar. So that's one that's totally accessible.
Good point. All right, let me introduce you. So welcome to the Organic Gardener podcast today. It is Saturday, March 17th, 2018. And I am just super excited about my day and my very first guest this morning. I'm going to do three interviews. His name is Jay Sinha, and he has this awesome business called lifewithoutplastic.com, and he's here to share his story with us today. So welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you, Jackie. It's a pleasure to be here. Great. Glad to be here on this lovely Saturday morning.
Well, I am so excited to have you here. But so do you want to tell listeners like a little bit about yourself and where you're at and how you started this business maybe, or just anything? It doesn't have to be that.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, sure. So, well, I have a kind of a mixed background. My background's in law and in science and biochemistry and ecotoxicology. And my wife, Chantal, and I, she has a background in law as well and in business and business ethics. And so our story kind of goes back several years, quite a few years, actually. It really starts with our son, who was born back in 2003. And at that point, we were, you know, quite eco-minded, quite environmentally friendly in the way we lived. But when he was born, we sort of took it to a new level because we had had some pretty serious issues with mold in the place that we were living. And we became quite sick for about a year. And as a result of that, we became more environmentally sensitive to chemicals and toxins in general in our environment, in our living environment, and all around us. So we started looking for ways to just decrease our toxic load all around, to decrease our exposure to different types of chemicals in our everyday life. And Chantal read this article in a magazine called Mothering Magazine, which the physical magazine itself doesn't exist any longer, but it's a website. And it was a great article on plastics and the chemicals that come out of plastics. And that was kind of news to us, because up to then we had been doing sort of what we thought was the eco-friendly thing to do. We would, if we had a bottle of water that we bought, we would continue to use the bottle and wash it and use it over and over. Those bottles, though, are intended really for single use. They're not really intended to be used over and over, so they break down quite quickly. So that really got us thinking, well, because as you use these single-use disposable plastics more, they break down more quickly and they can leach chemicals more quickly. So that got us thinking, and we started to look for a non-plastic water bottle. It was very hard to find, you know, back in 2003. At that point, there wasn't that much out there, but we did come across a company, or at the time it was a co-op, now it's a whole company called Clean Canteen, and they were making stainless steel bottles. So we ordered one and tried it out, and we're really pleased with it. And so then when our son was born, we were looking for glass baby bottles, because we wanted to avoid using plastic baby bottles if possible. Chantal was breastfeeding, but we still needed to store milk and stuff, and didn't want to be boiling plastic bottles, because the high temperatures are really hard on the plastic and break it down faster. We just didn't want to expose our son to plastic at all. And so we looked around for glass baby bottles, and they used to be the norm about back in the 70s and before that.
Sure.
But at that point in the early 2000s, they were very hard to find. They had kind of gone off the market as plastic had really taken over. But again, we did find a company that was still making them, even Flow in Ohio. And so contacted them and asked if we could buy some glass baby bottles. And I said, sure, no problem. But the minimum order is 1,000, because they only did wholesale. So that kind of got us thinking. And Chantal had always wanted to start her own business. And I wanted to be involved as well. And we wanted to sort of pool our resources and our skills together into something. And we wanted to do something environmental. And so this idea came up of offering alternatives to plastic products for people, because we were looking for them and finding them very hard to find. And we knew there were others out there looking for them too. So it really began with those two products, the glass baby bottles and stainless steel water bottles. And then we got some stainless steel food containers as well to replace Tupperware. And so the Tupperware is an interesting one, because we had, at that point, we had lots of Tupperware or plastic containers, and we would use it over and over. And as your listeners are probably aware, if you maybe put a Tupperware container, fill it with spaghetti sauce, and microwave it or use it over and over, over time, you'll find that the container might become a little red or orange, and you can't wash it off. That's because the spaghetti sauce, which is oily and subjected to a lot of heat when it's heated up, actually goes into the plastic. And so if the spaghetti sauce is going into the plastic, then there's some of the plastic definitely coming out into the spaghetti sauce. And that got us thinking as well. And in fact, what is coming out are chemicals, which we now know can be chemicals that disrupt the hormonal system in humans. As we call them, endocrine disruptors. And so that again got us thinking. We began with these stainless steel food containers as replacements for Tupperware. And that's how it all began. We put up the website and started selling these things, but also educating a lot about the whole plastics issue and building awareness. And then it really took off, because the Canadian government back in 2007 decided to ban the use of bisphenol A, BPA. I imagine your listeners have probably heard of that. It's a chemical that is used in a plastic called polycarbonate, which was used to make a lot of baby bottles and water bottles. And it's still used in, you know, those huge blue plastic bottles that are used for water dispensers in offices. It's still used for those. It's also used, there's some things people might not realize, it's used to make the epoxy, which lines cans of canned food. Pretty much all canned food, there are a few examples now that have non-BPA lines, but most still have a lining made out of that is made out of BPA. Another one which is kind of strange and very widespread is those very thin cash register receipts, which are like a very thin paper. The ink on them is made with bisphenol A. So if you're touching those receipts and touching the ink, it's actually going directly into your skin. And just a little tidbit on that as well. If you're using a cream which has an antibacterial element to it, like an antibacterial agent in it, that will actually increase the absorption of the BPA from the cash register receipt. There's research showing all this. So when the Canadian government banned BPA in baby bottles, that really put a lot of more interest or built a lot of awareness around people looking for alternatives to plastics for baby bottles, because they banned it in baby bottles and the lining of baby formula containers. And so that got people more and more interested in finding alternatives, and we happened to be there at the right time and right place, and that really gave a boost to our business. And at that point too, we were really going more broadly. The focus was on trying to find alternatives to plastics to minimize contact with food and drink. But then it expanded from there, and we looked at sort of everyday life. So we brought in things like non-plastic brushes, non-plastic shaving equipment, non-plastic bags, all kinds of different things to sort of be a bit of a one-stop shop for finding alternatives to plastic. And so that's basically how it took off. That's our initial story.
Cool. Well, I'm so bummed that I wasn't recording in the beginning, because I'm going to go back and talk about a couple of things that we talked about in the pre-chat that I was trying to
see. Oh, cool. So was that recording just now?
Yeah, that all got recorded. Okay, but like before, like when we first got on, because when we first started talking about it, I was saying that I had made a New Year's resolution. So my good friend Dacia, who a lot of my listeners have heard me talk about, and she sponsored the show before, she has a business where she makes aprons and she makes handmade soaps and natural laundry detergents. And she's really getting into wildcrafting and using the things that you find locally for household products and things. And she's the one that challenged me. She didn't really challenge me, but like last year she made her New Year's resolution to stop using plastic in every, like, you know, not buying things that come in plastic at the store as much as she possibly could, you know, just really eliminating the plastic from her life. Because a lot of the things that you're saying, you know, she knows, and she has two kids that she cares about. And also, and so after watching her do it, I did it. And so this year, so my students at school keep going to me, because I'm notorious for having a lot of water bottles. Like I keep a case of bottled water in my car, a case of bottled water in my fridge, a case of bottled water in my classroom, because for me, it's the container. I'm not buying the water. I'm buying the container because it's easier. And just if I don't, I end up being at school without water and I'm thirsty and I get dehydrated. And so just, I don't know, it just seems like, but my husband's always on my case about don't do that. He's always on my case about the, you know, what you were saying about you're not supposed to reuse those things, because I would reuse them a lot and I would put them in the freezer a lot. And it was funny because I talked to this girl. I took this airplane ride once. I just happened to sit next to this scientist girl, young girl, and she says, you don't have to worry about the reusing them. The plastic's not going to leak out of them. What you have to worry about is the food, the bacteria that's going to grow in that bottle, because you're just not going to be able to get it clean enough. And her job was working for toy companies, making sure the plastic, she seemed like a fairly credible resource, but I don't know. And I think also that might've been so long ago, it's before they were making these one-time disposable plastic bottles like you're talking about that are meant for one-time use. Because, like, now when you squeeze a plastic bottle, like, a lot of times the water, when you open it, the water just squirts out because it, like, just sucks, you know, as soon as that air is released or whatever, it sucks in. And they're so flimsy. They don't, like, I don't know. So I think a lot of what you're saying is absolutely positively true. And so I've been trying to eliminate the plastic bottles and drinking and canning jars, like you were saying. And I bring, and the other thing is, like, this, I follow this Food Babe diet, and she talks about you should get up in the morning, very first thing, and drink lemon water with a little shot of cayenne pepper. Like, that's her first challenge. She has, like, this 20-day challenge. So, but I just, that I wasn't successful with that, but I do take that bottle of water to school with me every day almost. And by, like, right afternoon, right about lunchtime when the kids are, I'll start it maybe drinking it at lunchtime, and then it lasts me all afternoon. It just gives me an extra boost of energy. So that works for me. And so I've been drinking, bringing it in the canning jars, and the kids are like, why do you bring a canning jar? Why don't you use a plastic bottle? And I'm like, I'm trying to get rid of plastic. And, like, I train them all year because everything comes. We have breakfast in the classroom, and there's all these plastic spoons, and there's all these plastic cups and all these straws. And so I try to get them to recycle as much as we can, but it doesn't always work. So, but I wanted to say, I think I found you on Facebook because there was this awesome video that your wife had posted about the plat. You guys went on a trip. Am I right?
Not sure exactly what you're referring to. I mean, we have, what was it? What was the video about?
Oh, I thought I saw it on Facebook. A video about, like, just like a 2 mile wide thing of ocean or somewhere of just plastic bottles and plastic.
Yeah, no. What you're probably seeing is there's a video that went viral just recently. And in Bali, there's a photographer, a wildlife photographer, who filmed plastic underwater, and it's just stunning, the video, as he's swimming underwater, and you can see things, plastic bags and bottles floating, and it's all along this particular coastal area of Bali, near Indonesia, and so that's probably what you're thinking of. It went viral quite quickly, and that's the ocean plastic pollution issue is absolutely huge and is literally exploding all over the world as governments take notice, there's attention coming to it, both from NGOs, from individuals, and really now from governments too. Just to give you a couple of examples, in the UK, the United Kingdom, the government there has put in place they have a 25-year environmental plan that they just launched earlier in the year, and as a part of that plan, they're trying to reduce completely the use of what they call avoidable single-use plastics by 2042 completely. And similarly, the European Union has a plastic strategy to try and eliminate completely single-use plastics. And because the core of the problem is these single-use disposable plastics that are largely packaging. So a lot of the attention is focused on packaging, and one of the other issues that's come up is that, especially, for example, for the UK, is that they used to be shipping a lot of their waste, in particular the plastic waste, to China, where it was accepted and would largely be landfilled or burned. But China put in place a policy, this has been coming for a while now, but it actually came into effect in January, that they're no longer accepting much of the waste, in particular plastic waste, from other countries. So that's forcing countries to now deal more with their own waste. And this applies to the United States, Canada as well. So that means ramping up, for example, their recycling infrastructure. But our focus is really trying to reduce plastic use source completely. And based on that, our focus is on changing individual action and changing individual behavior and habits, because that's really what it is. It's a question of habits. I mean, and you talked about it yourself, about just, you know, you use those single-use bottles, you have a whole pack of them in your car or at home. It's just a matter of changing the mindset so that you, instead of using those, you have maybe a dispenser at home where you can keep water, or in your car, and you have a bottle or a few bottles that are durable and reusable, out of glass or stainless steel, that you carry with you or have in other places, and you just get in the habit of using those. And also, it's important that people not be afraid of tap water, because tap water is generally tested regularly, whereas there are not the same testing requirements for bottled water. What many people don't realize is that a lot of bottled water is actually tap water that has likely gone through a reverse osmosis process, but it's not necessarily regulated very well, so you don't know. But it doesn't go through the same testing that municipal tap water does. So most tap water is actually quite safe, certainly in countries like Canada and the U.S., unless there are known problems in a certain community. So,
like Flint,
it's a question of really shift mindset.
Sorry, like Flint, Michigan. I guess I shouldn't laugh, but
well, exactly. That's what I was thinking. Yeah, with what's happening with the natural gas there, it's definitely not drinkable. No. But that's what we're sort of looking at. And so, in terms of reducing the plastic pollution around the world, it's got to start with individual behavior. And a lot of what we're seeing is that the waste that comes from this packaging is ending up in the oceans, because on land too, but the oceans are a bit of a sink. The things that do get landfilled may go up into the air and go into waterways, or there's a lot of waste that comes from ships, from cruise ships. But coming out of water, like rivers that come directly from large cities, is a huge problem and go straight out into the oceans. And so the issue in the oceans is that we're finding now there's tons of research that's been done by scientific researchers around the world and some incredibly dynamic NGOs. One, a couple in particular, based in the States, are the Five Gyres Institute and Al Galita Marine Research and Education. And Al Galita, there's a fellow named Captain Charles Moore, who essentially put a lot of this research and this problem of plastic in the oceans on the radar back in the early 2000s, when he was sailing from Hawaii across to California, to Long Beach, where he's based. And he was stunned to see that out in the middle of the North Pacific, there were literally islands of plastic just floating there. And what he found looking deeper is that, yes, there was a lot of visible plastic, but there's a lot of tiny little pieces of plastic just below the surface. For about the first 6 feet of water, there's massive amounts of what we call microplastics. And this area in the North Pacific came to be known as the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. But it's kind of erroneous to think of it as just one patch, because it really is more of a plastic smog now all over the world. Because when the plastics go into the water like that and are in the water, they break down over time through action of water, the sunlight, salt water. They break down quite quickly into tinier and tinier pieces of plastic. And so there's the pollution issue, but there's also a pretty serious health and wildlife issue here, because wildlife are eating this plastic, fish, seabirds, and even plankton. And so I'll just explain that. So you have plankton are tiny, tiny little organisms in water which produce oxygen, and they're at the base of the oceanic and, in a sense, global food chain. So if what we have found from some current research as well is that plankton are preferentially eating plastics over their normal food. And there's incredible research that shows that they've tagged pieces of microplastic with a fluorescent tag, and that they can actually see the microplastic going into the plankton. And so plankton are eating this, and then they get eaten by small fish, and the small fish go up the food chain and are eaten by larger fish, and then seabirds eat them as well, and the larger mammals such as whales and sharks and dolphins, they go up right up the food chain and are causing really serious problems. You're finding whales that are dying in quite large numbers, because their stomachs are simply full of plastic and they cannot digest, and their intestines are clogged and their digestive systems just break down, and they essentially starve because they cannot take in actual food. It's really quite tragic. And in terms of the larger global issue for all of us. If, because the plankton produce about 50% of the oxygen in the world, if the plankton begin to die off because of ingesting plastic, then that means there's a good chance of a pretty serious issue for all of us humans as well, because of the amount of oxygen that plankton do produce. Apart from the fact as well that as these plastics go up the food chain in the oceans, they get concentrated more, in particular the chemicals in the plastics, in the fat tissues of fish and birds, and those fish in particular are eaten by humans eventually. So as the plastics go up the food chain, they also are and as they are in the ocean, they actually absorb and adsorb means they actually attach to the outside of the plastic, other chemicals or toxic substances that might be in the ocean water already. Things like fertilizers, pesticides, heavy metals, those get attached to the plastic and then go into the fish and birds as well, and then are concentrated up the food chain, eventually coming to humans as well. So when you're eating fish, there's a good chance that there could be some of a concentration of chemicals coming from the ocean originally that are making it into that fish. And this is another issue that's being looked at quite closely by researchers. And that's also why governments have jumped on board so seriously now, because, and why it's such a big issue at the international issue, because it's so clear now that oceanic plastic pollution is widespread, it's global, and it's pretty much everywhere. There's sort of a layer of plastic around the world now, in the oceans, yes, but on land as well. And most recently, it's being found in drinking water and even bottled water. Just this past week, there was a study, which again has gone viral, which was done by commissioned by a journalism organization called Orb Media. And they had a professor named Dr. Sherry Mason at University of Fredonia in New York. And she's one of the top microplastics researchers in the world. They tested 259 different samples of bottled water from 11 different brands purchased in 9 different countries. And what they found was 93% of those 259 samples had microplastics in them. And these microplastics are different types of plastics that the bottles are made out of or the caps are made out of. It seems like they think, based on this data, that the plastics are coming even just from the use of the bottle. Like for example, when you screw on or off the cap, little tiny, tiny pieces of plastic sure. and are coming into the actual water. So it's safe to say now that there's really plastic everywhere. I don't think you can avoid it now anywhere in the world, as it's been measured in up in the Arctic.
I think that sounds like a good segue into, like, I was just like thinking about like your website and like what options you have for people, like, because don't you have some really cool innovative options I was looking at?
Yeah, well, in terms of getting at the single-use disposable plastics, which are really a good place to start, because they're at the core of the problem. And we, like in our book, we talk about Life Without Plastic. It's the same name as the company, the Practical Step-by-Step Guide to Avoiding Plastic to Keep Your Family and the Planet Healthy. It launched back in December and is out there and is getting great reviews. And it's really a how-to guide on how to decrease your plastic use. And so in chapter 2 of the book, we describe something that we call a Pareto plastic-free living approach, where you, Pareto being like the Pareto Pareto principle, is this 80-20 rule that basically says that about 80% of the effects come from 20% of the causes. So the way we're looking at it is, in terms of single-use plastics, if you get rid of 80% of the single-use plastics in your life, just 20% of the single-use plastics in your life, your impact is probably closer to the 80%, because they are really at the core of the problem. So some examples are really easy ones that anybody can do anytime right now. It's, again, as I say, it's a question of behavior and habit change. but let's start with plastic bags. It's so easy now to find non-plastic bags that you can take with you when you go shopping. Or if even if they're not non-plastic, durable, heavy-duty plastic bags that you can use over and over again, as opposed to taking a plastic bag every time you go shopping. So you bring those with you. You leave some in your car or in your purse. You can get ones that fold up really small, or they could be cotton ones. We have organic cotton ones we offer, are super durable, and you just need to wash them periodically. Which you should, and you, if any bag should be washed periodically to eliminate bacteria. You bring them with you, and then you can also get smaller bags, like mesh cotton bags that you can use for products, produce, like fruit and vegetables. And you can get also cotton bags that you can use for bulk items, like flour and oatmeal, things like that. It's just a question of changing your habits and having them nearby and making it easy for yourself to use them. So another one is a plastic water bottle. I mean, we really believe at this point everybody should have a non-plastic water bottle that they carry with them. It's just so easy, and again, it's a habit. You keep one in your purse, in your backpack, in your car. You can get a carabiner, which allows you to click it to your backpack, and then you can fill it up wherever you go. Water fountains are relatively widespread. Going to a school, just fill it up there. Another one that's very easy and should be standard issue in any plastic-free living kit is a mug made out of stainless steel or glass or ceramic that you carry with you, so you don't have to take the disposable cups when you go to get a coffee. Those generally are lined with plastic, and most of them are not recycled. And because they're generally paper cups that are lined with a plastic, they cannot necessarily be recycled because of the mix. So they generally go straight into the garbage and into a landfill. So that's one that is very easily avoidable by carrying your own cup, bringing it to the coffee shop, presenting it to the barista, and getting your own coffee
in your own cup. Can I ask you a question about that?
Sure.
So I always have like a coffee cup, but it always has a plastic lid. But it's right. A heavier duty plastic that I wash, so exactly. It's okay, right?
You can get some that do have stainless steel lids, but they're pretty few and far between. But yeah, it is usually a heavier duty plastic. It's usually a plastic called polypropylene. It's number 5 in the recycling symbols. And yeah, it is a much more stable plastic. And the good thing as well is that because it's the cap, it's not as indirect contact with the rest of the beverage.
Yeah, that's what somebody told me once.
Yeah, so I mean it's not ideal obviously, but it's definitely much better than using a cup that has one of those plastic lids. Now those plastic lids you get on the disposable cups, they're usually made out of a plastic called polystyrene, which is number 6, and that is a plastic that you really would want to avoid. It's much less stable, and it can leach a chemical known as styrene, which is not a good chemical to be putting into your body. And again, those generally are not recycled very much at all. Polystyrene is a plastic.
You know what I realized when I was in New York a few years ago? Because I'm huge on carrying, you know, my grocery bags and things like that. But when I looked around and I see people like in suits and in like, they just don't carry things. Like they don't have a backpack or like I always felt like I should. I mean, a lot of people do, but a lot of people don't, like, and they're mobile. And like, I don't know, to me, people like that.
It's a habit change. You have to get in the habit of carrying your own bottle with you. It's going to be, you're going to see it more and more. It's difficult maybe at the beginning and takes getting used to, but it's possible. It's simply a habit and behavior.
Yeah, I can't imagine not doing it myself. But like I said, and yeah. I've been much more successful carrying a canning jar of water this year than I have before. Like pretty much since January, I don't think I've brought a plastic bottle to work.
Yeah. Well, two others that I can highlight that are super, super easy and don't take much space at all. Utensils, plastic utensils. So you go for takeout and almost inevitably you're going to be receiving a plastic fork, knife, spoon, and you're going to use them probably for a matter of minutes. and then they're going to go into the garbage, because again, most of these are not actually recycled. Just a little tidbit for your listeners, only about 9% of the plastics that go into the waste stream are actually recycled. So much plastic is just going straight into a landfill. So to replace utensils, what you can do is, one that we offer is a spork. It's a combined spoon and fork that folds. It's made out of stainless steel and is so easy. It's probably our most popular product, and we use them all the time. We love them. Keep them in pockets, purses, glove compartment. They're great for traveling. They don't get taken away through security on planes. And they completely eliminate the need for plastic utensils. Another one is, for people who use straws or who like straws, are non-plastic straws made out of either stainless steel or glass or wood or bamboo. Straws are an enormous problem in the world, and there's more and more happening to decrease the use of straws. People are becoming aware of this, but approximately 500 million are used around the world right now, and that's actually just in the States. 500 million straws used and discarded each day in just the U.S. alone. And just to put that in perspective, that's an average of about 1.6 straws per person per day, and would amount to about 175 billion every year in the U.S. And that doesn't even include the straws that are used on, for example, the little juice boxes that are often served in school.
No, you're kidding.
A little straw on the side covered in plastic. Yeah. But that doesn't even include that in that 500 million. And so straws, an easy way to avoid them is to, one, have your own, but also when you go into a restaurant or a bar, they're very often automatically given out. But if you indicate to the server before that you don't want a straw, then you can avoid that right away. And again, it's a question of changing the habit and the practices in restaurants and bars as well, because they just put them in automatically. And so often they're not really used at all. They maybe, you might just stir your ice cubes and take the straw and put it down beside and then drink directly from the glass. That's pure, pure plastic waste. Again, it's going to go likely straight into the waste stream and a landfill, but that's a really easy one. So options, as I said, are stainless steel. They are super durable, will last forever. Glass, same sort of thing. They're much, much stronger than people realize. And the companies,
how do you clean that though?
You can get little brushes. The stainless steel one that we sell, it comes with a brush to clean it. Little brushes that go right down inside, very easy to clean. And for the glass ones as well, you get brushes, same with bamboo. And bamboo, people ask sometimes, well, how long will it last? If it's cared for and cleaned regularly and dried out between uses so bacteria doesn't develop, it can last for months and years. And as I was saying about the glass ones, they're super, super durable. Most of the suppliers of glass straws, they give lifetime guarantees so that if it does break in some way, you can get a free one. I mean, obviously, you don't want to be smashing it against the stone wall, but they're surprisingly durable, even for children. So there are options out there now that are very easy to come by and very easy to incorporate into your everyday life.
Awesome. I love all this. I don't understand. Like, for me, the grocery bags is more a matter of convenience than anything, because they're so much stronger. They hold so much more. And my friend Decia that I was talking about before started making those mesh vegetables. Now, I have to say, I haven't switched that, but I do notice more often I'll go to the store and, like, partly just because they soak those vegetables so much, I don't want to put them in plastic because then it ends up ruining the vegetables. Like, I know they're spraying them down with water to keep them fresh. And right. But like, and so I'll just have one grocery bag that's just for vegetables and just put it all in there and not even get any plastic bags for a lot of things anymore. But Dacia makes those mesh ones that you're talking about. Because then when I get home, I'll find some recycled plastic bag to put it in the fridge. But I've been thinking about getting those mesh types ones. And I've been seeing on Facebook some, like, kind of foldable material that people are putting things in.
Well, there's also another interesting one that really eliminates the use for plastic wraps, you know, like Saran wrap. Because what most people don't realize is that wrap is made out of a really quite an awful plastic called polyvinyl chloride, which is a very unstable plastic. I mentioned earlier there was the chemical BPA, and then there's another class of chemicals called phthalates. And phthalates are also endocrine disruptors. They affect the hormonal systems in our bodies. And phthalates are a key element in polyvinyl chloride. Sometimes up to 55% of the plastic are phthalates, because they're a softener, a plasticizer, they call them. And saran wraps or plastic wraps are obviously very, very pliable and flexible. But they, when you put one of those wraps on, for example, a hot dish, and then you have condensation coming up and settling on the, mm-hmm. the plastic and dripping back down into the food, you can be pretty sure there's going to be some leaching there. So one great replacement for those is these non-plastic wraps that have come about, which are essentially a cotton, usually an organic cotton, which is coated in beeswax and particular essential oils that help in the fixing process. And these wraps, they work just like the plastic wraps. Well, even better, I think. So you spread it on the top of a bowl, and with the warmth of your hands, it will stick to the bowl. They work beautifully, and you can use them for all kinds of things, like fish, or for like meat, or for cheese, for snacks, and you can put them in lunches. They're easy to carry. And in terms of cleaning, you generally want to clean them with cold water if possible, because if you're using really hot water, it'll take off some of the beeswax. But we've been using them for years and are able to clean them perfectly well with cold soapy water, and use them over and over and over again. One of our staples, and people just love them once they see them and use them and incorporate them into their life.
I love all of this. So probably since my show is called The Organic Gardener, we should maybe just like quickly tie in how this relates to your garden, because I mean, you're bringing birds into your garden, you're bringing insects into your garden, you're watering your garden. Do you want to be watering your garden with these toxic chemicals? Like, I don't know. Do you have anything to say in that sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, I guess I could talk about some of the gardening tools that, like, there's a section in our book about the garden and how to avoid plastics in preparing your garden. I mean, in terms of garden tools, there's lots of non-plastic tools. You can come, like, trowel, shovels, hose, mainly wood and metal. The soil, it depends on the scale of your garden. If you're going to be buying a small amount of soil, it's pretty hard to avoid it coming in those plastic bags. But one thing you can do is reuse those bags, because they're usually a much more heavy-duty plastic, quite thick. You can clean them out and reuse them for different purposes.
Yeah, Mike always uses those.
Oh, yeah? Or you can order soil in bulk, get together with some neighbors and order it in bulk. The pots and the planters that you get small seedlings in, that becomes more hard. And we've, over the years, we've accumulated a lot of those. And they tend to be made out of, the heavier-duty planters are usually made out of polypropylene, that plastic I mentioned before, which is quite stable. Or a polyethylene, a high-density polyethylene, which is also quite stable. And they can be recycled and reused. But the trays of small seedlings are often in polystyrene, which can become very brittle and is not that recyclable. So one way to avoid those is to create your own seedlings using a soil blocker. Have you ever talked about those before on your show, the soil blockers? Which
Lisa Ziegler has kind of talked about, I mean, she's definitely talked about it. She sells them on her website, and I think Jean Martin Fortier might have talked about them, but go ahead, because I have a lot of new listeners since either one of those interviews.
I mean, seedlings are like, the soil blockers are sort of the cookie cutter of gardening, and they totally eliminate the need for any type of plastic tray or container. So as I mentioned, those seedlings are usually for being grown in this thin, cheap polystyrene plastic. And it's not only toxic, but it's so thin that they easily wear and tear and crumble, making them kind of useless for reuse. But so using a soil blocker, it creates little cubes of soil with a hole in the middle where you insert your seeds. And then you add a final layer of soil on the top, and then they do their sprouting. That's one option.
So wait, let me kind of explain it a little better, because I know when she first talked about it on my show, I was like, what the heck are you talking about? So you plant a tray of dirt, like a, I don't know, a big pan of dirt. And then you take this soil blocker that, like you said, is kind of like a cookie cutter. So it's like, it's got this handle, I think, right? And you can get soil blockers that are like 2, 4, 8, maybe, I don't know how big they get, but like, and then they come in different sizes. And then you, like, it's not until you plant, wait, I don't know when it is that you actually take that dirt, but like, yeah, you push it down and then it pulls out like the block of dirt to put right in the ground. So there's never any cup. There's never that plastic container, right?
Exactly. And it leaves a little hole where you can put, where you put the seed in, and then you put over a layer of soil over the top of all of the little compartments that you've made. I've actually never used it myself, but I do have friends. We live in a rural area, and I do have friends who have used them and to great success. It's just, again, it's a bit of a habit change and changing, getting used to it in a different way.
But I know. I want to buy them every year. I just haven't been able to come up with the money for one yet to try, but yeah. And then also I think the other benefit to it is your roots grow straighter down. You don't get those roots like all,
because
there's no pot for the roots to get all stuck to. Yeah, I think that's one of the big secrets to it too. But I think a lot of, and so my listeners tend to be pretty, there's new gardeners out there, but the people who have answered my polls and surveys tend to be people who have 5 years or so, are kind of on the master gardener side, are looking to expand to markets. So I wanted to ask you about that, because like we were saying in the pre-chat, Anastasia Cole Pulkeas, who wrote The Farm and the Roof, really talks about the importance of making a profitable business that pays decent wages. Like she has this 3P thing. And then another, like a lot of people that listen to my show are interested in green jobs, and they're entrepreneurs like you. And there's probably somebody out there who's like curious about the business side, like how you created your business. How did you make it profitable as compared to being like a nonprofit? Like I said, when I first called you, I thought it was a nonprofit. And so I'm excited to hear. And also I was telling you, I was listening to that interview the other day where they said, if you want to make a bigger impact, I mean, a nonprofit's good, but if you really want to make a big impact, it has to be something that's going to meet a need, that's going to be a profitable business.
Yeah. Well, I think you hit on the core element there. It's really got to meet a need. And beyond that, I would say if you really want it to be successful, it's got to be meet a need that you yourself are trying to meet, like scratching your own itch and something that you're really passionate about. So in terms of gardening, there's all kinds of possibilities there if you are interested in gardening and are already a master gardener. But that's the key. I think you've got to find something that you're really passionate about and then build it in a way where you're trying to find a little niche that you've got to do some market research. You've got to find out if there's anything out there already based on what you'd want to do, and you want to try and find an angle or an aspect that hasn't been dealt with before, or maybe hasn't been dealt with in a way that you think needs to be out there, like taking a twist on an old idea and going with that. Just to give you one example, like a lot of what we do in terms of looking for new products, it involves going back in time. And some of the products we've had that have been most successful have been ones that are not new, but we've given them a new twist. A couple of examples. One is an ice cube tray. Most ice cube trays these days are made out of plastic or silicone. Mm-hmm. But in the old, back in the day, like back in the 60s, 50s,
I remember you
had ice cube trays made out of aluminum. And so my mom had one of those. And so we took that and we made a model, a prototype of one made out of stainless steel, and it's become super popular. Those are the ice cube trays that have a metal tray and then a mold that you put down into the tray with a handle. So you put the water in, freeze it, and then you pull the handle and it breaks the ice cubes, and it works really well. It cuts them really cleanly.
It's kind of like the soil blocker, except for ice instead of soil. Like now that you say that.
And another one is popsicle molds. Most popsicle molds that you find are plastic, but we've taken that idea of a popsicle mold and we've made ones out of stainless steel as well. So the things like that, like really going back in time again, with like the mason jar, it's been around for ages and ages and ages. And is an old tool that's given all kinds of new twists. There's a company called EcoJars, which now specializes in lids for mason jars that you can use for drinking or for making coffee or for filtering water. That's their niche. It's like focusing on the mason jar and new ways to use the mason jar in an eco-friendly way. Little ideas like that can go a really long way. And now you have people becoming more and more aware of not just environmental issues, but I'd say broad health issues and trying to lead more of a healthy life. And they're more aware of pollution in general and looking for ways to decrease it in their lives. So there's lots of possibility. And in the gardening area, in terms of food production in general, lots of opportunities there, as I think we're seeing a resurgence of small-scale farming happening all over the world. So that creates a lot of opportunity. In the area where we live, which is a rural area, we have a number of amazing organic farms that have been started by, you know, young millennials who just are fed up with the food supply and also want a different kind of lifestyle, a different quality of life, and are creating these farms and selling at farmers markets and doing community-supported agriculture where they do food boxes that they provide weekly through the summer. Super successful. So those are a few ideas for building a business out of an idea and going with your passions and scratching an itch to meet a need.
Jay, you have been the most awesome guest, and I wish I would have been recording our pre-chat, because then I wouldn't have gone back and said some of those things, because I got to go. I have an amazing guest coming on the line in just a minute. But thank you so much for sharing everything. I have two quick questions. Are you a millennial? 1980 to 1995?
No, I'm older. I'm 50.
Oh, okay. Me too. I love 50, though. It's the best year ever. And I forgot what the other question is. I'm so sorry, but tell listeners your website one more time.
Oh, yeah. So our website is lifewithoutplastic.com, and you can find all information about our products about plastics and our book, Life Without Plastic, of the same name.
Cool. Thank you so much for everything you've done for our planet. And just, I know listeners are going to love this episode, and thanks for sharing today.
My pleasure, Jackie. Thanks so much for reaching out and for your patience getting back to you.
Yeah. Okay. You have a great day. Thanks. Sorry. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey there, Green Future Growers. Would you like your friends and neighbors to create an organic oasis too? Would you like others in your area to learn about earth-friendly practices for their gardens and yards? If so, we would love it if you would share the Organic Gardener podcast with your local community or college radio station today. Thanks again for listening, and remember, grow local.